is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It is Wyman and Bob. We are live at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center, Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com. Big show coming up today. We got our buddy Paul Moyer joining us at 3 o'clock today. Big 5 o'clock hour. John Morosi will be with us at 5, and immediately following him, a superhero. And Cody Barton will join us. And we're still determining whether Dave's going to allow me to be in the room when he's here. If I can ask him any questions, Dave just might go Cliff Averill and me and just take over.
It's getting creepy. I think he's going to be creeped out. You have to stay because I don't think he'd stay in the same little room with just me.
He doesn't want to be alone with you.
Yeah. I'll be like, Cody, do you remember when you did that?
That was awesome. By the way, before we get into everything that's going on, $10 million.
Money to burn.
I think even if I had money to burn for $10.091 million, I better be able to live in it, fly in it, or drive in it. I mean, come on, man.
That's a good way to put it. I like that. it'll just sit there, and I don't – wow.
That's a jersey.
That's amazing. Yeah, you just have to break it down into percentages, right? It's like,
wow.
You know, I guess it would be like you and I maybe spending $1,000 on something like that. I don't even know what the comparison would be, but if it's like that, then you go, "Oh yeah, I splurged a little bit on this, but you know, I can absorb it." So, yeah, it's Who's the person that bought it?
I'm scrolling through the story here. They're just citing other jerseys that have sold at different times. I'm not seeing who purchased this. Obviously somebody with a whole boatload of disposable income, but that's madness for a jersey. They're just talking about in late August, a 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle card sold for $12.6 million. The most ever paid for a sports card and the first sports collectible to break the $10 million threshold. So that happened. I hadn't even heard about the Diego Maradona jersey that sold for $8 million. That's 9.28. Excuse me. I don't want to cheat the fella. Yeah. So there you go. That's what it's like to have just dumb money. Give me that jersey. It'll be plastered on my wall in a frame and there's $10 million. wow. Some say you could buy a really, really nice house and a really nice car and maybe a really nice boat for $10 million.
Oh, yeah. I like the way you put it, though. What'd you say?
Live in it. For that money, that much money, I better be able to live in it, drive in it, fly in it.
Yeah.
Something. That's madness. But anyway, all right. We digress here. The other story in the snapshot was the one I think we knew was coming. It's not surprising, but it's certainly still a bummer. Jamal Adams out for the season. Ian Rappaport tweeting that he'll have season-ending surgery. You could kind of tell by Pete's demeanor after the game and even when he talked about it, like he was being very general and vague, but saying, hey, they're going to need some work on that. It's serious. Ian Rappaport tweeting out earlier that he will have season-ending surgery to repair a torn quad tendon. So he is headed to the IR. He's been placed on there, and then they sign Tabor. We'll figure out how to say it. But he was on the Atlanta Falcons practice squad, kid out of Florida.
Yeah. So Ryan Neal, you know, we'll see if he's ready to go. He's been hurt, right?
So I believe so. Yeah.
He's not on the IR list or anything that I can see anyway. Right now, he's on the regular roster. I think we trust him. I think Josh Jones has had a good camp. He's the kind of player that you can't really replace. I mean, his backup, I'm sure, will do a good job, but he's just special. He's such a special player. And I know a lot of people say, "Whoa, we sure haven't seen that here." Well,
did in year one.
We did in year one, and then, you know, you just saw. And then that whole time when he was practicing before leading up to that, and I know it was 2 years ago, but, like, he didn't just all of a sudden become a bad player. So, you know, they were just about to kind of unveil him and see what he's about. Also, you know, the other thing we don't talk about with him, it's always about his explosion of activity and how fast he is and he hits and all that, but also just his smarts. I mean, he's a really smart football guy, understands the game, and, you know, you've been working with him all preseason, and now all of a sudden, you know, you hope the backup is going to be able to step in. But no offense to whoever that is, it's just that they're just not going to be – it's just not the same without Jamal.
Didn't you feel like we got a glimpse of what it was going to be like? Because they had him up on the line. He was blitzing. Yeah. He almost had Russell for a sack. He defended a pass. It just seemed like, okay, that looks like what came over in the trade. That looks like year one. And he even made comments. It was in the story that he, you know, feels like something along the lines, I feel like I'm getting back to playing football, you know, with how they were going to use him. And there was an excitement to it. And just, my goodness, man, just you talked about, you know, the year you put in all this work, you had the best offseason of your career, best shape, couldn't wait to play, and then injury, and you're in the shower crying. I mean, it's just, I can't imagine the devastation he feels, because that's, again, people can hate the trade, love the trade, however you feel about it. You can never debate his intensity and his effort. He's never, last year's lack of numbers was not due to lack of effort by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, he's just a different player than everybody else. I mean, and you look at, you know, one thing I always said about him when somebody tries to block him, and that's why I like him playing up in the box, is because, you know, a lot of defensive backs, although we did talk to Tariq Woolen today, and he blasted that receiver. I don't know if it was Judy or it was Sutton, but and then, you know, the tackle he made out there. But, you know, typically your defensive backs just are not taking on blocks. And Jamal, like I said before, it's like a personal affront to him if someone tries to block him. Like, he makes sure not only does the person not block him, but the person knows that he shouldn't try it again.
it was just a bad idea in the first place.
Yeah, there's just something different about how he gets off of blocks. And, you know, and actually, I was looking at his technique and everything, and, like, I think linebackers, D-line, I mean, he's obviously got a little bit more run-up, but the way he, you know, uses the guy's weight against him, it's kind of like judo. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like push when pulled, pull when pushed, right? So he's very much that way with, you know, blockers. And then he's just too, like I said, I think his brain works too fast for his body. Like, Russ took a little step, and he took that weird step that I think blew his quad out, because he was all over him, man. And it's just a shame, man. If you go back and, you know, think about the first 2, 3, 4 games that he played when he got here, this is only 2 years removed. There's no way. But, you know, the one thing that does pile up on you is the injuries. Because when they do, all of a sudden, and I mean, you get on a roll of playing really well, and all of a sudden, you know, it gets interrupted for whether it's 4 games or 5 games, and then you come back and you kind of have to start over. And so he had that momentum going where he was playing his best football in 2020 and then just did nothing but get hurt. I mean, he had the finger thing. Remember, they had the one picture where his fingers all splayed open.
Yeah,
and then he had to do the shoulder that year.
Yep.
And then last year had stuff. So
another shoulder.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. His quote, by the way, he spoke for the first time since his latest finger injury, and the quote last week was, "He feels like the new defense quote puts him in a position to make plays. I'm back in my element, man. I feel like I'm back playing defense."
I wish you hadn't read that to me.
you can hear the relief, like, okay,
yeah,
they're going to put me back to what they were having me do in year one, where I was an impact guy. Year two, I don't know what Ken Norton was doing with all these guys. It wasn't just Jamal, but, you know, that was just a weird year that I do not put on him. I know a lot of people want to, that's fine, but you watch the film, you see what these guys were being asked to do, and again, not just him. You can go to Benson Mayoa, Carlos Dunlap, Puna Ford. You can go down the list of what they were asked to do. It just didn't make sense. And this felt like a return to form, and he was excited about it. Like, okay, now we're getting back to, you know, smash mouth football and put me up on the line and be an impact guy and be around that ball. And you kind of saw, I mean, I know it was brief, but you kind of got a little taste of it out there, even on that play. You didn't see that last year.
Right.
And it's such a bummer, and it looks so innocuous. It didn't look like, you know, we talked about it. Often you'll see limbs go the wrong way when they hyperextend, or you'll see something that was very obvious, ankle roll. It looked like a, you know, kind of whipped around, grabbed the ankles, got up on a knee, and all of a sudden he's kind of rubbing it, limping, and it looked like, for a football play, pretty innocent.
Right. And then, you know, you look at it's not like he hasn't been staying in shape, right?
I mean, yeah.
The way that guy runs, he never gets tired. So, you know, he's excellent with his cardio. You know, that, by the way, that's one of those things that a lot of people think maybe is just, well, of course you're in shape. But, you know, I became more of a pro the older I got. And I told you the story about me and Simon Fletcher running hundreds after the other conditioning.
Yeah, that's – he was –
Simon was a smoker.
Yeah, and he did worse when he stopped smoking.
Yeah, well, but Simon and I, we would run like 10 hundreds. He called me Dave-O. He's like, Dave-O, we're going to run some hundreds today? I'm like, all right, let's go. So, you know, that was like in my sixth year. It was done on my own. So me and Fletch would stay out there afterwards. And by the way, yeah, he wasn't a chain smoker, but he smoked cigarettes. And I would be like bent over, you know, sucking air in as fast as I could, and he'd be standing up just breathing through his nose. I was like, damn, that's impressive, man.
All right, give me a Marlboro. Give me one of those.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it was the cigarettes. It was more that he's just a freakish. That's the thing you run into in the NFL. You run into freakish people.
You did say he stopped for a while and it didn't work out for him, right?
Yeah, he cut down on his consumption of booze, and then the sack started going away. So he went with what worked. No, he was like an old school guy, you know, that just an awesome football player. But like the fact that he didn't, after 10 100s, any normal person, even an athlete, probably
laying on the ground trying not to throw up.
And so that's what I say. There was a story of a guy named Michael Brooks there who, I guess his truck. And there was ice and snow on the road, and his truck went into a ditch, and he lifted the truck out of the ditch, and people like swear that happened. So there's some freakish, you know, people in the NFL, and I got to say, Jamal is one of those guys, man. If you look at the way he plays, and you know, just his energy, and there's just something different about him. And yeah, what a shame. And it's really a shame for the defense, too, because, I mean, being able to use that guy and count on him for sacks. And we saw him playing up on the line, and Clint Hurt, and I think it was Damian Lewis, who's the defensive line coach. They were out there working with him. You know, he was up with the D-line, obviously not in a three-point stance, but he was, you know, running all kinds of stunts and stuff. And by the way, when we get Cody in here, that stunt that he ran where he got the sack, it's hard to do, man. You got to go really fast one way and then cut all the way back and keep it tight in order to get there. And that's what Jamal is best at. So it's a shame. I mean, to me, if he's gone for the whole year, I mean, maybe he gets 2-3 interceptions, but I'll bet you he would make a ton of plays up around the line of scrimmage.
It's so weird because he only missed two games over his first three seasons, and you talked about this yesterday with the Jets. He didn't have an injury history at the college level.
Yep.
Didn't have it in his first 3 years with the Jets, so it's not like you were taking on somebody who, he's great, but has a hard time being available. You know, that just was not his story at all. And then, you know, you fast forward to where he's at here. He's missed 9 games over the first 2 seasons with the Seahawks. He missed 4 in 2020, the final 5 last season after he suffered another torn shoulder labrum that required surgery. Missed time in training camp this summer after re-breaking the middle finger on his left hand, another injury he had to deal with in the past. He's had finger surgeries in each of the past 2 off seasons. So just health-wise, I mean, yeah, he got the big contract, and that worked out well for him, and he had a brilliant first season, but the body's given out on him. I don't know if that's bad luck or if that's, you know, is this a guy that just moving forward is just going to be an injury waiting to happen? Kind of, is he just becoming brittle at a very young age? I mean, he's not an old guy by any stretch. So it's just, it's kind of, you know, I'm almost wondering, are we going to see him again? Are we going to see him in a Seahawks uniform again? Is he going to play? I mean, I'm certain he wants to play without question, but man, you just have to wonder, what is the body going to allow him to do it at the level he's being paid to do it and that he expects to do it?
Yeah, it's only his sixth year in the league. So, you know, it's funny. We talk about him getting a 9.5.
26 years old.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, there's plenty of time for as far as the clock ticking, you know, especially the way that he plays. And, you know, you talk about how he's just different at every level. I mean, if his skill set drops off, you know, 10%, 15%, he'll be like every other good player, right?
He'll just be good. So, but he won't be special.
Yeah, we talk about the 9.5 sacks that he had in 2020. 2019, he had 6.5.
Yeah.
You know, which I don't remember seeing that, but he's not been an interception guy.
He's been the sack guy.
Yeah, he's been the sack guy. He's got 4, though. He had two last year. So,
well, and Clint Hurt, for his part, is saying what every coach says after a major injury, regardless if it's a star or if it's just a, you know, starter who's not on that, doesn't have that profile. It's next man up.
I mean, it hurts because the guy's a great football player. I've said that before. And, you know, so I definitely, it's a shot. You don't have a lot of guys that's like that. But, you know, like I said, we have so much confidence in Josh and Ryan and their ability. Ryan's obviously proved to us last year he can go come out there and help us and do things. And Josh has shown that, too. So it sucks. You know, hate it for Jamal. But at the same time, for these guys, they can take advantage of the opportunity. And they've shown they can do that.
You know, and Thumb asked a decent question here on the show sheet. Just to, you know, with Jamal missing the time that he did last year, Ryan Neal getting the reps that he did, that certainly is not a bad thing for Ryan Neal. I mean, yeah, you hate that it came in light of an injury, but that experience helps him if he gets thrown into the fire or if they go with Josh, whatever they do there. But he got some really, really good time under his belt because of last year being an injury situation with Jamal.
Yeah, and a lot of times guys like Ryan Neal will have a guy in here later on and Cody Barton that they end up rotting on the vine. You know, they're good enough to play and they sit behind someone else. So, yeah, we'll see what if Ryan's able to – he's also coming off an injury and how he's able to respond to that. Because everybody's different, like I said. And like I was saying, yeah, Jamal, these are starting to stack up now, and you just hope that he's able to come back and be as sharp as he was in 2019 and 2020.
One from Pete Carroll, just in, you heard Clint mention Ryan Neal. He also mentioned Josh Jones. Here's Pete just sort of glowing about Josh Jones when asked about the safety situation.
Just really pleased with Josh Jones. Josh has done nothing but positive stuff since the day he got here. And since then, he's just kind of taken the next step and the next step. Coming to this camp, he came back. He had a great camp. He had the most turnovers. He had the most big plays and big hits of all of the guys. And so you saw him in the rotations already. He was already part of the plan, and now he just takes a bigger step forward. He's strong. He's fast. He's 220 pounds. You know, he's a big kid that plays the position with a really good motor, and he's a smart kid.
What did you see from him?
Yeah, I thought the same. I mean, I think a lot of people are probably going, "Oh, yeah, that's just Pete being positive and everything." But that's what I saw. He had one of the better camps. He really did. So, you know, you look in the he had a pass knocked away in the Steeler game, had four tackles in that game. I mean, all the stuff that he did out at practice. And like we talked about before the season started, you know, most of the evaluations coming from practice, you know, what they're doing out there and how he responds and everything. But yeah, he's one of those guys that Rabes and I called his name quite a lot, man, during the preseason games. He played well. He's a good player. Now, he's not Jamal Adams. I mean, look, and Pete's not saying that he is. But, you know, he had four tackles and a tackle for a loss in the Chicago game. You know, he was just all over the place. He was one of those guys you go, wow, that guy really stood out. So that's encouraging. We kind of know what we can get out of Ryan Neal depending on, you know, how healthy he is and ready to go he is. But, yeah, Josh Jones was one of those guys in camp and in the preseason that really stood out.
Now, would you see them using him, whether it's Ryan Neal or Josh Jones, the same way they were using Jamal? Because we got done talking about how unique he is at rushing the passer. He's not the interception guy. He's up there on the line, and he's just a playmaker up there. You see them altering at all what they ask the guy who's filling in for him to do, or do they just plug him in and say, hey, we were asking Jamal to do this, that's what we're asking you to do?
Yeah, that's a good question, not a great question, Bob.
I think it's pretty great.
No, I think it's a good question. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that, you know, look, Jamal's not like that special. I mean, he is, you know, he's a really good player and a Pro Bowl player. But, yeah, I think they use him the same way. I mean, depending on what he can handle. You know, and that's the thing is, you know, there's a lot of complication with, you know, you go up and play in the box as a defensive back, you now have a gap. And you have to know where your gap is and what you have to protect. You know, the defensive backs, they have, you know, leverage as far as, you know, turning things back in for a corner and then the safety, just their angles and stuff like that and knowing where everybody else's gap is. But because that's really what, like, safeties on a run game, it's like if somebody screwed their gap up, they can fill in because they got plenty of time and stuff like that. So there's more to do, you know, than just sitting back. But, you know, strong safeties are mostly that way anyway. Typically they're up in the box. So, yeah, I think it's a good question. I think it's probably, yeah, he can handle it, I would think, based on his performance in the preseason and in camp. And that's just the way it is. I mean, this is just our defense. Yes, we're using Jamal Adams in a different way, and maybe you don't do that as much with Josh Jones. And especially this week, I would say let's keep it super simple.
Yeah.
Because not only of filling in, but also the fact that San Francisco will take advantage of you if you're not in your gap. The way they played in the first half, the defense, if that happens against San Francisco, they could go in being down 21-0.
Yeah.
You know, if Daryl Taylor's chasing the mailman, as I always say, you know, like a dog chasing the mailman. I mean, yeah. If he's, you know, not in his gap and not, you know, being sound. And, you know, a couple of times I was talking to Bump about this where, you know, these things are really important. But, like, if you're a linebacker, if it's a handoff or even a wide handoff, you shuffle. You never cross your legs and run. Mm-hmm. You just shuffle and keep your feet apart down the line. If it's a toss, you turn and run. But if you turn and run when you're supposed to be shuffling, that's how you get knocked on your butt because, yep. You know, your feet are crossed.
Yep.
So, you know, that those kinds of things really matter. And there's a couple of times with the linebackers where that kind of stuff didn't happen. So they're going to have to be extremely sound. So, I mean, if I was the coach, I would try to keep it pretty simple because remember the old phrase, the illusion of complexity?
Oh, yeah.
That came from John Lynch, I think.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, that was – you like that one.
I do.
Yeah, that was what how they described their run game. And, you know, I think when it comes right down to it, it's pretty basic. But they do have, you know, a lot of we're going to get to take two. But they do have a lot of complexity there.
All right, let's get to take two.
All right, well, the Seahawks announced today they're inducting Sean Alexander into the Ring of Honor during the October 16th game against the Cardinals. He'll become the 15th member of the Ring of Honor.
He deserves it. Yeah. I mean, he's one of the great players in the history of this organization. I mean, yeah, certainly there are things about his game that people had issues with, and some of it is valid. And, you know, who he was between the 20s versus, you know, in the red zone, a little different in his approach. But yeah. The guy produced.
I'll ask Moyer today. He had a quote about him. And we'll ask him when we get him on because it was like, don't hate him for what he's not or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to pound you in the head. He's not going to put his shoulder
he's
in.
Not Earl Campbell.
I was talking about a play today on the huddle. They were playing the Redskins at the time, and they had to pick up a first down or kick a field goal, and they missed the field goal. They ended up losing the game. But it was a I-backs, and it was a lead play. And it was Steve Hutchinson at left guard, Walter Jones at left tackle, Mac Strong at fullback, and Sean Alexander at tailback. And they handed it off and ran that way, and they didn't pick up the first down. And it was like 2 yards. I was shocked. Because it was like Tyler Lockett. It was like Tyler Lockett dropping a pass.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I mean, it's just a bunch of Hall of Famers there, basically.
Seems like an impossibility.
Yeah, exactly. And the only reason I bring it up, not because it's a failure, just because Sean Alexander was so good. And then at that time, those were three of the best players, Mac, you know,
oh, yeah.
Steve Hutchinson and Walter Jones that in the entire league.
Well, this morning, the greatest tennis player of all time, Roger Federer, announced his retirement. The 41-year-old won 20 Grand Slam titles, including 8 Wimbledon titles and 5 straight U.S. Opens, along with spending a record at 237 straight weeks, ranked as the number one player in the world.
Is that you're the tennis guy, Thumb? Is that sort of a indisputable debate? Is there somebody else that's in that debate?
There's a big debate because Novak Djokovic has passed him, and now Nadal is up there. So among those three, they're all considered the best. And
Djokovic has passed him in terms of what?
Total Grand Slam titles.
Really?
Titles.
Yeah.
How many does he have?
It's like 22 or something.
Could Serena
it's
have 22?
Well, see, that's why I was asking because I actually heard somebody on a national show debating. Just greatest, not female, male, just who is the greatest tennis player of all time, and they were making the case for Serena. I don't follow tennis close enough to know if that's a legitimate debate or not, but you're a tennis guy.
Federer had unmatched grace and elegance on the court. Watching him was something special. It really was. You have to go watch some highlights.
Unmatched grace and elegance.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
That's the best way to phrase it.
Okay. Take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife prostate. Coming up, how will the Mariners finish over this final 20-game stretch? We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob. We continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
The text is there for you, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. You guys can text in throughout the show, anything you want. Somebody accusing Thumb of plagiarizing that little line that he threw out there. The unmatched elegance and grace.
Come on, I'm like Geno Smith. It came to me in the spur of the moment. Are you going to accuse Geno Smith of plagiarizing that awesome line he had walking off the field?
Yeah, I feel like I feel like I heard that line somewhere before. Maybe I'm wrong, but anyway.
You know, you kind of sound like a. Remember when Elaine was being interviewed and the lady was saying, Grace?
She was doing the face.
You can't acquire grace. You either have grace. It's like, I don't want grace. I don't say grace. Yeah, grace. I don't know. It just didn't flow naturally out of your mouth there, Lefko. I'm like, that's not something a dude like you who's into sports and, you know, is working the board is going to use. I'm sorry.
Watch a couple of Federer highlights. Let me know what you think.
Dave will come away going, he's very elegant and graceful.
You know what was so surprising?
Go take these next five off and
Mike
go watch.
Had a comeback and an excuse and things like that. That's always a shock to me.
Yeah.
When he does that.
It's not part of his routine at all. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Dave, I don't know if you're aware of this. 20 games left for the Mariners.
Yeah, I was going to taunt you with that.
20.
Bob, you know, there's only 20.
Only 20. One more game, we're in the teens. It just gets too real. But they're a half game back of the Blue Jays for that top spot in the wild card race. Blue Jays currently losing to the Rays. They're five games up on the Orioles, and then the Orioles and Blue Jays are going to get into a three-game series starting tomorrow. So if we were looking at it, and we talked about the fact they don't have any winning teams left on the schedule, which with them doesn't really mean a ton because these are kind of scary games. These are teams they have lost to throughout the season, and I don't imagine they'll go undefeated in this 20-game stretch. What do you think realistically? I know it's, you know, listen, anything can happen. I won't hold you to the prediction. And I wrote it on the notes last night that I thought 14-6. I think that's reasonable. I could see a 14-6, 15-5, somewhere in that neighborhood. I think is based on the competition, they're not going to go. They're going to drop some of these games. But I could see them going, doing that. Does that feel too optimistic?
You said 14-6?
In the remaining 20.
That means
that'd be a 94 win team.
And that means that they take every series.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm just looking here going, okay, you got six. So with the A's, you got to take four.
Yeah.
All right. Four with the Detroit Tigers, you got to take three.
Three. Yeah.
Kansas City, two. A's, three. Texas, two. So that makes, I'd say it's lofty, but I feel like they can do a little bit worse than that and still get in.
Yeah, I think they're going to get in. I don't. Imagine anything crazy happening in these final 20 to where all of a sudden we're going, man, are they going to make it or not? I think they're going to be in. Just which spot?
Here's what I don't want is that they are going to be 14-6, but they're going to start off rough and have to win like the last series.
They're going to lose five in a row. Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that.
That's going to be painful to watch. And, you know, if it has to come down to that last series, you feel pretty good because, shoot, what did they – did they play three or four in Detroit? I'm trying to remember.
Three.
I think it was like 21-7 or something.
Yeah, they just,
as far as the run differential, they just killed them.
Yeah.
So, you know, here you are at home with Detroit. You like to think maybe they're not as sharp or whatever. You know, I think I always played like the 2-14 season. I played as hard as I could every single play, but there is some thought in the last game or last few games for professional athletes about not getting hurt. The last game in 93, which I played every game, so, and I was with Denver, I end up blowing my thumb up, and I'm like, damn it.
In the final game?
In the last game. And then, you know, we go to the playoffs, so I had to strap it down and then get the surgery afterwards. But I was like, man, I was so close to making it, not having any off-season, you know, rehab. It was just a thumb, so it was like, what, I squeeze a ball?
I got four other digits on there. I'm fine.
It was no big deal. But, like, I think for some players, and maybe this will creep into Detroit's minds, that, you know, and injuries don't happen a ton in baseball. But
yeah, I was going to say, I get that mentality in football. Certainly, it's a, you know, car crash every play. But I could see
you know, maybe there's a guy that's got, man, my arm is killing me. Maybe he's not as likely to go. Sure, you know, I've had a bad ankle most of the year. My back has been bothering me all year. We got 20 games. We're out of it. You know what I mean? I could see somebody maybe just other who would otherwise be in there and, hey, I'm going to tape it together. We're on a playoff run here versus season's over. We're not playing for anything other than just playing out the string and maybe ruining somebody else's season. So maybe I'm one of those players. I'm not as likely to go out there with this elbow that's been – it's bulky, Dave. I got a bulky elbow.
Uncooperative.
Yeah, just something they've been dealing with over the grind of 162 games. Maybe they're just not as likely to get out there.
This is going to be pretty awesome, though, going down the stretch here because the last 10 games are at home. You know, so you got 10 on the road right now, but the last straight – it's 10 straight games, got Texas, Oakland, and Detroit. And I can just imagine that that place is going to be going crazy.
It's going to be – well, we saw it last year. We saw it in the A's – or the Angels series to end the season. Yeah. Was madness. It didn't end the way any of us wanted. But, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's going to be a pack. I mean, it's been packed. The attendance has been phenomenal, you know, for teams you'd otherwise would be like, eh. Tuesday night, this team, that team, man, I'll just sit at home, watch it on TV. No, those stands have been packed. And I think coming down the home stretch, people want to be a part of it. They want to be there when this team secures a spot in the postseason. It was weird. I was looking at their season records last night. They're 80 wins right now. Two more wins. It's a winning season. Mm-hmm. They haven't had back-to-back winning seasons since 2002-2003. And that's when they strung four in a row together. You know, so they went 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003. But that's the last time you've had back. There have been winning seasons interspersed throughout between then and now. Never back-to-back. It's gone winning season, losing, losing. Well, here's a winning season. And then another losing season to immediately follow. So 90 wins last year. You're going to be a winning team this year. It's amazing it's been that long just to put, you know, book it, just to put two back-to-back winning seasons together.
I'm just looking at the attendance right now. You're right, by the way. And then, you know, looking at the attendance, and I was really surprised Atlanta had that many travelers.
Yeah, there are a lot of Braves jerseys and hats and whatnot out there.
Yeah. We saw it on Monday night with the Denver fans, too. But
yeah.
San Diego, not so much, even though it's a bitter rivalry. But, you know, look at those two, 34,000, 24,000 as far as attendance goes. 42, 44, 45 in the Atlanta series.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got to imagine. I think the test will be Texas because it's not like there's tons of Texas fans anywhere. But I feel like, you know, hopefully the 42, 45, 47, whatever it is predominantly Mariner fans.
Yeah, and it makes a difference for those guys. You hear it every single time when there's been a crazy game or buildings packed. They all make reference to it. It's not just pandering to the fans. You talk to those guys on or off the record, they get juiced up, man. Having that building full is a big deal to them. So it's been really cool to see. All right, coming up, Geno's Week 1 performance might have changed the quarterback conversation for the Seahawks moving forward. We'll get into that next as we continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center with Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. Our buddy Paul Moyer is going to join us at 3 o'clock today, so make sure you stay tuned for that. By the way, Dave, you'll be stunned to know I was at Costco last night.
You're like Shannon, man.
I love Costco. I just love it.
I'm fascinated by it, huh?
Yeah, if you guys lived in Seattle, I'm certain I would run into her probably every week.
Yeah.
But as I was leaving, you know how they check your receipt, they look in your basket, look at the receipt, and they highlight her. All right, have a great night.
Make sure you're not stealing anything.
Yeah, yeah. Some giant something. Is there anything you could steal in Costco and not be completely off? Everything's huge. But anyway, the girl that was doing it, she goes, "Are you Bob Stelton?" I went, "Yeah, yeah." She goes, "I'd recognize that voice anywhere." And I was like, "I didn't say anything."
Oh, no. Really?
I didn't speak, I don't think. Anyway, but she's like, "Oh, yeah, yeah. I listen to you and Dave every day. And I met Dave at a couple of golf tournaments." And I said, "Was he nice to you?" You know, and she goes, oh, yeah, he was great. I go, I guess you got him on a good day. You know, and then she goes, and I met Paul Moyer, too. She was, like, really excited about about meeting you and Paul. And I said, now, Paul, there's a nice guy. Dave, you just got him on a good day. But she's like, I'll tell him you said that. And I'm like, or I could tell him since I'll see him tomorrow. Yeah. But but no, she was very sweet. And she was very cool. I didn't catch her name, but she was very excited that she had met you a couple of times and Paul Moyer.
I think it's pretty amazing that she identified what did you say? Like, hello?
I literally walked up with a cart and handed her the receipt, like, you know, you do. And I don't think I said anything.
I think you probably said something like, let's make it fast, sweetie. Something like that, maybe.
Yeah, that's how I speak.
Yeah.
Sweetie. hey, can we speed this up, Toots? Huh?
Actually, yeah. The only person you call sweetie are the tough guys on the text line.
Yeah, I like doing that. So, yeah. Hey, some of our listeners have been on the receiving end of that. It's all fun. It's all fun.
Well, that's awesome. I love it when people come up and say, hey, I love your show, you know.
Because, yeah, it's nice. It's nice.
Yeah, it's just, it's great. I had somebody come up and say it's not the Matrix.
Yeah, they know
the, like they know the little phrases, the things that we talk about. So yeah, that's it's really cool.
Yeah, she was very cool. But again, more importantly, she was excited about meeting you and Paul Moyer, and she said she listens every day.
The great Paul Moyer. She probably got us switched up. She thought I was Paul and Paul was me or something.
You know, she said a couple of golf tournaments. He seems more regular at the golf tournaments than you.
I've been to one golf tournament in like the last 7 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So maybe. Maybe she thinks it was it was Paul.
Well,
what'd you get at Costco, Bob?
What did I get? I got some fruit. That's usually what it is. I run out. I'll buy the fruit and I use it for protein shakes every morning, and then so I run out of that water. You know, that's a big item for me. Water.
Fruit and water.
Fruit and water.
No more Jelly Bellies.
Yeah. Well, they have them there.
Oh,
boy, the prices have gone up.
Well,
I think I was first getting those for you guys, they were like $12.99 or something for those things. They're like $17.99 now.
Yeah.
Yeah, jelly beans, sir. Then, they're at a premium.
Yeah, until Lefko brought the crappy ones.
Idiot. How dare I buy him something? Oh no, those are the bad ones. Or how about hey, thanks, Bob. That was thoughtful. Awkward.
I'm sorry, that's really funny. I said Lefko. I was just joking. Bob brought in the knockoff jelly beans.
Because that's all they had.
That's all they had. And Lefko's first response was to go, oh, these are the crappy ones.
Didn't use that word. I mean, it's funnier to say that. I was disappointed, and you're right. I should have just been appreciative.
You used something much worse than that word, I think.
No. I go, oh, these aren't the good ones.
I said something much worse than that. But, yeah, it's just an awkward day. Did the same thing when you bought him the salami cheese wrap that you got from downstairs. Just out of the kindness, thoughtfulness of just being thoughtful and the kindness of your heart. Hey, I thought you might like this. He goes, oh, yeah, these aren't as good as the other ones.
Yeah.
I was like, or how about thanks, Dave? That was thoughtful.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't go to Costco with Shannon because it's the rare time that we fight. I don't know why. We end up in these petty little arguments like, well, what are you doing that for? Well, why'd you put that there?
Like, oh, it brings out the worst in you, too.
And the last time we were in Palm Springs, I wheeled the cart over to her, and I said, I'll see you in the car.
I'm tapping out.
She was happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She could shop in peace.
Get out of here.
All right. Well, I took a left turn there. I'm sorry. I know we were going to talk about Geno's week one performance, but we've got Lefko frantically altering the show sheet as we speak right now.
Sorry, so. Lefko.
Sorry, Thumb, but you deserve it for that comment with the jelly beans anyway. So you love that. Dave is just
Lefko,
cracking
every
up.
Once in a while Lefko just like says exactly what's on his mind.
Yeah, know?
It's
just
no filter.
Just an awkward moment.
Yeah.
It's usually when somebody's doing something nice for him. He comes out as a critic when somebody's doing something nice, buying him something that he didn't ask for, to, you know, being thoughtful, and then he just comes with a
meats
critique.
And wax covered cheese going to this body.
He just
only the premium
blurts. Sometimes we'll blurt things out, and it's very hilarious to me. All right, let's get back to the show here.
All right. Well, we will get to Geno and what change that might have made to the quarterback conversation that week one performance. We'll get to that coming up. I don't want to remind people that Hawks Live is back for another season, and you can join hosts Michael Bumpus and Paul Moyer tonight. That's happening tonight, 7 o'clock, Bellevue Square Center Court, for a live broadcast.
podcast and a preview of this week's game, along with special guest Abe Lucas and Michael Jackson.
Okay, yeah,
they got two of them.
Nice,
two guests there. So head on out there, Abe Lucas, Michael Jackson. If Moyer and Bumpus weren't enough for you, they're going to be there. So that's tonight, 7 o'clock, Bellevue Square Center Court. You can learn more at SeattleSports.com. Did I miss anything on that? Did he send you an update?
Yeah, it was Moyer. He was advertising, you know, shamelessly plugging his own show. But yeah, Abe Lucas will be interesting to hear from. I've not heard from him yet. I think at first when he was drafted,
yeah.
I remember hearing.
Didn't we hear him out at the podium during training camp? He was up there one day. I thought we were listening.
I don't know. The thing I like about him is he seems kind of grumpy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like grumpy O-lineman.
I do too. Yeah. I think he's got some nasty to him, and I thought he had a pretty good game. And, you know, we talked to Ray today, and, you know, he said he thought, I don't know, you said there was some pro football folk. He got a pancake on his first play of the game, and then he said he thinks Cross needs to get his hips down a little bit maybe, and that's going to be a challenge for him being 6'7". But, you know, other than that, thought it was a pretty solid performance. Because you have to, I mean, look, you're a rookie. I was so lost my rookie year. I say that a lot, but it really was, like, the game was so fast, and these guys out there. And then, and I'm sorry we got, out on another topic, but just the Geno thing, I really want to like ask you and Lefko and just all of our listeners, like, was that something that you've never seen from Geno? Like, there was something, I was very surprised, which sounds bad, like it makes it sound like, oh, I didn't think Geno was any good. I thought he was good, but there was a couple plays that he made that were out of this world. Like, they were like Russell Wilson type of plays, and I just didn't think he had that in him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were. I mean, we'll get into it coming up throughout the show, because it's definitely something worth addressing, and just to see if anybody's mind was changed by what they saw, or is it, hey, it's one game, it's one half, let's slow down.
It's just one game.
Where are you at? Yeah. Where are you at with that? So we'll get into that. You guys can sort of mull that over, and then we'll get to that later. But we were just talking about Hawks Live and talking about our guy Paul Moyer. He's going to join us next as we continue. Live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center, it is Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710.